Hello, this is Kevin Barrett saying, if you think Bilderbergers is a great name for a self-serve fast food joint, but a lousy New World Order global takeover organization, you're on the same page with Truth Jihad Radio. Please do subscribe to Truth Jihad Radio by way of the website truthjihad.com. Welcome to Truth Jihad Radio, the radio show going all out for truth on all of the most important issues suppressed by the mainstream media. One major area of mainstream media suppression, of course, is the issue of the annual Bilderberg conferences. And who better to talk about that with than Tony Gosling, the former BBC journalist turned independent red pill broadcaster and author. He's always a good source on Bilderberg, and this year is no exception. I got a great email from him introducing the topic. So let's get into it and find out what the global elites are planning for us. Welcome, Tony. How are you?
Hi, Kevin. Yeah, I suppose I'm best known for grabbing the Bilderberg domain name, Bilderberg.org, way back in 96. And that was because, as a former mainstream press journalist coming across these people, I was really rather irked that I hadn't heard of them before, considering the amount of power that they have. And at the time I was working in Oxford with a guy called George Monbiot, who's gone on to, I mean, not long after that, in fact, he got a column at The Guardian. And I remember chatting to him about this, and he said, oh, no, I don't think there's anything important to see here. Well, of course, I knew there was. So I was aware that there's, there is this kind of understanding amongst a lot of mainstream journalists that you simply don't talk about this. That was a perfect example of what we call self-censorship. You know, nothing to see here attitude from someone who was probably more interested in their career than they were in getting the truth out to the public.
Well, George Monbiot has that problem in many areas. He's, of course, notorious for his poo-pooing of 9/11 conspiracy theories and various other things like that. He seems to be sort of a kind of controlled opposition figure for people on the left.
Yes, he is. And I think his attitude to things like nuclear energy as being very pro it has been also shown up his rather fake environmentalist credentials. But anyway, this year's Bilderberg, I just think, you know, having studied this for a few years now, was quite interesting to go through their agenda, first of all, to come up with my own version of what their agenda really means, because they have this way of using just like literally wall-to-wall euphemisms to describe everything, not just the agenda, but also the list of participants, of which sometimes very important participants are there but not on the list, which I discovered back in 98, I think it was, with Tony Blair being speaking to the woman that served Tony Blair his breakfast at the Bilderberg conference in Turnberry, but he wasn't on the list. And that is this whole agenda itself. So they start off this year, what they say is populism in Europe. Well, Europe is their little project, the United States of Europe, to be more precise. And that was something that was admitted to many times by various participants, that this was the whole idea of Bilderberg, was to cement this transatlantic alliance between, not just between the United States and Brussels, but between all of the different countries. Kissinger under Nixon said he wanted to pick up the phone and talk to one person. He couldn't be bothered, and he found it too difficult talking to 33 different European foreign offices, state departments, whatever, and he wanted to just pick up the phone and call to one. And that's why we've got populism now in Europe. This is the word that's been given to the fact that the ordinary people are simply not served by the European Union. Here in Britain, I did, in the run-up to the Brexit vote, I did a chat on Talk Radio Europe, which was only 20 minutes, but it was really looking at the decline of Britain since 1973 when we joined the common market, they called it then, the European Economic Community. It went on in 93 to become the EU, which was a political union, which was always intended to be, but it was never sold in the original way, you know, like that. And so Bilderberg's been absolutely totally tied into this whole business of bringing everyone together under their control, not under any kind of democratic control, but a kind of theatrical facade, a charade of democracy, where the European Commission really run it and they're all appointed to the job. So that really means the populism in Europe really means crushing the backlash against the EU, because there's becoming now a very widespread backlash against Brussels as people rumble their game. So that's number one. Then we've got the inequality challenge. Well, this is one of the results of fascism, is that you get a big split between rich and poor. Now, I am actually I describe myself as a socialist of the old school. That is to say, not that people should be able to sit around and do nothing, but that we should have full employment and that nobody in society should be left destitute. I mean, this is really a kind of taking family values, I suppose, and bringing them into the political sphere, where we say, well, you know, we're going to make sure everyone has a roof over their head, everyone has water, you know. Why would you not want, and that's what we've got in Britain now, is we've got a government that doesn't want people to have water, which is actually severely criminal, really.
Are they privatising your water supply?
It's not just that, that they're not given the money to pay for any water, and that there aren't free water supplies around anymore. So what's happening is people are being cut off from their welfare payments arbitrarily, and left sometimes for months with absolutely nothing with which to feed their families, pay the rent, or buy water, for God's sake. So this is the cruelty that this particular system we've got now, which is really, I suppose, the bankster system, the post-2008, it wasn't a crash, it was a bailout, and the crash is coming, by the way. But anyway, so that inequality...
I agree with you on the socialism in a certain way. That is, I think the natural monopolies should be public, not private, and especially the currency. Yeah, and if the currency is public, then
currency,
it's easy to take care of the people.
Is infrastructure. Currency and banking is infrastructure. The railways are infrastructure. Electricity is infrastructure. These things should be supplied at cost, not dished out to your favourite gangster mate in order to make a healthy profit and spend with them and their rest of their family can spend the rest of their lives playing golf and enjoying foreign holidays whilst people are being impoverished. I mean, I think that's just the basic kind of socialism I believe in. I don't think there should be too much control on, you know, on businesses, on what people can do and how much money they can make until they start making mega bucks. But we've got the opposite of that now. So the more money you make, the less tax you pay. And this is getting really perverse. So inequality, well, that's coming up with excuses for the destruction of poor people.
And of course, when Bilderberg says that they're going to take on the problem of inequality, what they really mean is they're going to take on the problem of people not liking inequality. They're all for inequality. They're a manifestation of inequality.
Exactly. They are inequality, you know, personified. So so the other agenda items, then we've got the future of work. Well, that's interesting. You've got loads of useless eaters now. People have been being replaced by technology, and of course that technology is owned by them, not us. So it's really, I mean, the discussion really should be around the control and ownership of the technologies. And what we should be having, if there was any kind of real democracy in the West, it's become a charade under these guys. But what we should be getting is very, very short working weeks, and we should maybe even only be working 1 or 2 days a week, because the technology is taking up the slack for the rest of the week. But what's happening is not that at all. It's that a few people are in very, very high paid jobs. And then there's a whole tranche of low paid workers, mostly whom are actually migrants, economic migrants that have come into Britain. I mean, I'm just talking about the UK, which is what I know best here. And then you've got a whole load of people who've just completely fallen through the cracks, Kevin. You know, basically they're now down in the sewers trying to survive and gulping for air.
Yes, absolutely. And so what does Bilderberg think they're going to be doing about this, besides finding better ways to consolidate their power to avoid having to be responsive to people's demands?
Well, they're saying, well, look, we do care. We really do, you know, and they can say it as many times as they want. I don't know if anyone's really going to believe them, but they keep saying it. This is really about how to spin this and how to try and make out that, you know, that these big profit-making corporations are now dominating the world. The West anyway, really care about us when they don't. And I don't think they're going to do anything about their marvellous monopolies they've got on this technology, because all of us need it. And so therefore we have to work more slavishly for them. And really, it's a slave system. I mean, that's really what we've got now, a wage slavery system. The freedom is going out the window. But people don't want to actually stomach this. You know, they don't want to really think about it. And that's part of their trick, is that what they're doing is so wicked, so evil to the domestic population, never mind people in places like Syria, Libya, Iraq, etc., in Afghanistan. You know, the domestic population is now coming under the thumb. And one of the ways they, another thing that they're discussing at the conference is this artificial intelligence is on the list there, using computers to fight our wars. And why is that, Kevin? That's because, I'll answer my own question, cheeky. But anyway,
I thought you were interviewing me for a second.
The reason I think is because there are increasing numbers of people in the military, including just basic serving soldiers and middle-ranking officers, that are just simply not prepared to do a lot of the things that they're being told to do. They're talking about these drone assassinations, for example. No one can surrender to a drone. You're just talking about the Grim Reaper, effectively, the Reaper drones suddenly arriving, you know, whatever, so many thousand feet above you, you can't even see or hear them, but you're dead. And not only you're dead, but everyone at the wedding is dead, everyone at the funeral is dead, the bride is dead, the groom is dead, the children of the person that's being buried are dead. And the best way to actually make this happen is using computers and artificial intelligence. So you basically say, well, try and find me somebody that's a bit of a radical that we don't like, and let's murder their family. Obviously, soldiers don't really like doing that, even though they've managed to persuade the Israeli soldiers to shoot live, you know, ammunition at civilians since the beginning of April. There's not every soldier in the world is like that. So that's why they need AI also to spy on and control the masses. So it's basically hooking up a great big data tube to Google. So every time you type a search, every time you send a Gmail to a Gmail account, everything you're doing, any way related to these social media giants, is being vacuumed up and stored in a big profiling database. Now, I imagine yours and mine, Kevin, are, there's a few red lights flashing on there. We're the kinds of people that these guys don't like, because we right. question 9/11, we question everything, and they want complicit people.
Well, you know, what could possibly go wrong with creating killer drones flying around in the skies and then giving the computers through AI the ability to just decide who they want to kill? I mean, what could possibly go wrong with that? You know, you can imagine a dystopian scenario down the road where, you know, once the computers are all suddenly hooked up to each other and becoming, you know, autonomous, they pretty much will run the show if they've got these killer drones that they control. And they can kill anybody they want at any time, then I guess humanity will be completely enslaved by computers.
Well, you see, this is, I mean, it's actually the professionals, robotics professionals around the world, even though the mainstream press doesn't want to listen to this, they're telling us this. We should be having, you know, these guys on the TV every night warning us about this. But, of course, the mainstream media is now the spearhead of the war machine. So the war machine can't really do anything without its mainstream media lies, and that, it, you know, we've got this kind of illusion of truth. Many of the people, of course, at the Bilderberg Conference are senior media people, particularly the London Economist, which many people pick up. They think it's authoritative. Well, it's the authoritative version of, you know, what you're supposed to think, what you're supposed to believe, and in a way, it is a sort of parish newsletter for the Church of Money, the Economist. It's a kind of belief system. It's about thinking, well, I mean, all this stuff about God, that's a load of nonsense, isn't it? And actually what really counts is how much money I've got coming in. And we've come to a world now which is, you know, miles apart from, you know, even just say 100 or even 50 years ago, where all of our major decisions in our lives are based on finance. They're not based on morality. They're not based on any kind of, you know, great tradition from the past or from our forebears, from the bitter experience of thousands of years of knowledge and, you know, writing. It's just based on how much money am I going to get and how much am I going to lose. And that is actually a shortcutting human intelligence. What it's doing is it's cutting out vast areas of our consciousness, of our soul, in order to just control us. That's all it's about. It's about control. And if you go back to you know, right way back to biblical times, to Jesus and the money changers, that was what really got Jesus crucified. In fact, it was the action against the money changers in the temple, because the people who were running the temple had started to become more interested in the money changers than they were in the faith, in the Ten Commandments. And when the money changers came to them saying, oh, look, this guy, you've got to get rid of him. He just overturned our tables, you know, yesterday or whatever. That was the key thing. Money, I think, is always at the heart. It's a kind of competitive system to the Abrahamic faith.
So if the Church of Money is the church and the Economist is the parish newsletter, so who's the Pope? Who's the Pope of the Church of Money? Jacob Rothschild?
Well, I would suggest right now over in Turin, it's Henry Kissinger. He's the guy at the top of the table. Okay, so you've got your Pope, but at the end of the day, you've got to have someone who will read the sermon. Maybe they'll come up from the front benches of the pews, and that's Kissinger. He's the kind of brains behind this. And in a way, a lot of the other stuff is a kind of backdrop to him and his project. I mean, one of the things I've discovered this year, Kevin, which is reading Manfred Petrisch's blog, and he's originally Swiss-German, and he's now decided he's had enough of Switzerland. He was a banker in Switzerland. He now lives over in Abkhazia on the Black Sea. And he's pointed out that ABS, who was the Deutsche Bank during World War II, and then he was one of the very first ever Bilderbergers, he was in the first meetings in the 1950s. He's done a little bit of digging on this guy, and it turns out that he was running the Aryanization program at Deutsche Bank during World War II. And so right from the very start, the Bilderbergers have been inviting these people. ABS. I think his first name was Joseph. So that was a World War. He was a World War II anti-Jewish. Basically, he was robbing the Jews of their money in the Second World War in Nazi Germany. And there he was at Bilderberg in the 1950s. Another one that Manfred has dug up on his All Smoke and Mirrors blog. He does some fantastic work, actually. But I think particularly because he's worked in banking himself. He knows how these people function. And the other one is this guy, Kurt Kessinger, not Kissinger, Kessinger. And Kessinger was a German chancellor between 1966 and 69. But he was also a leading Nazi in the foreign office in the Nazi government. Then, of course, we've got Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, who chaired these meetings for the first 20 years, right from their inception, was the guy that got everyone together in 1954 to start them. And he was also a Nazi who denied it through most of his life. He was in the Nazi party, one of the first members. And then he was also an SS officer. He was also in the SA. And so Bernhard and ABS and Kessinger are all the German participants right at the very start of Bilderberg, and we're all Nazis. Now, this to me, it looks pretty obvious what's going on here, is what you've got is a lot of money made out of the Second World War by the Nazis. And these guys are then creating a kind of an economic empire, and they want to control that economic empire using the United States of Europe in a similar way to the United States of America had to go through a sort of political union after the Civil War. I mean, I'm not a great expert in US history, but the Civil War seems to me in the US to be much more about ceding power from the individual states to the center, a centralization of power, than it really was about slavery. We're sold this whole thing about, the American Civil War was all about slavery. I think it was actually much more about centralizing power, and that's exactly what Bilderberg.
Yes, absolutely. Although remember, the British government actually was helping to divide and conquer the U.S. by encouraging Southern secession and siding to some extent with the South in that Civil War, because the U.S. was a rising power that Britain at that time was worried about.
But that's right.
Of course, today it's somewhat different. It seems that the U.S. is perfectly happy to have Europe merge together into the EU, although that has to come with strings attached, such as more U.S. control through NATO. But the superclass that meets at Bilderberg, I'm not sure they really care too much which country's on top. They just want their little group of elite to stay on top.
Exactly. But I mean, I think to take your point about the U.S. Civil War, before the Civil War, there was more independence and more autonomy to the individual states. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Yes.
And I think that's also, we've seen this backlash against that in Spain recently with the last year's Catalonia secession referendum being successful. And then an immense, I mean, Spain is a fascinating example, really. I think if you go and have a look at the Gürtel scandal that's been rumbling on there for the last 2 or 3 years, there was a $35 million slush fund in Swiss bank accounts, which had just been put there through government contracts. So every time the government awarded a contract, part of the money for that contract didn't go to the contractor. It went into a slush fund in a Swiss bank account. And so the ruling People's Party in under Rajoy in Spain was able to have a massive amount of money to spend on any election and also on destroying their opponents. So if some politician from another party came along, like Puigdemont, for example, in Catalonia, they would use some of this money to just spend on destroying their, you know, destroying their character and destroying their personality in order to really control the narrative of the whole of Spanish debate. But thankfully, that's now been overthrown. The same is not the case, though, in Italy, where Bilderberg are meeting right now, because they've just had a general election in March. And the ruling party should be Eurosceptic. I mean, we've got a right-wing and a left-wing Eurosceptic party that have come together to form a coalition with a majority. And yet they've been told, in no uncertain terms by the president, you can't have the prime minister you want. You can't have the finance minister you want. What we're going to do is we're going to impose this guy from the IMF on you.
And I don't understand that. Doesn't that violate the kind of constitutional principles of Italy?
Well, I suppose 99% of the population would think so, but basically they control the president. The Goldman Sachs and the Bilderbergers controlled the Italian president. So the Italian president can veto these things on economic grounds. He says, oh, well, this is going to be bad for us economically, so I'm not going to agree to this guy being finance minister or whatever. And so he then comes up with a compromise deal. The president should not be interfering in this kind of thing. I mean, it's a bit like, say, Jeremy Corbyn winning a general election here in Britain, going to the Queen and finding the doors shut in his face, you know. Ah. So I've won the general election, but I'm not allowed to be prime minister? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now that would take us back, several centuries, you know, maybe to the Magna Carta or before, if that were to happen.
Well, it's not really, I mean, I don't think it's likely to happen, but I'm just drawing that as a sort of simile. But anyway, running through these agenda points, just as a couple more to look at, the US before the midterms, this is the easy one. That's what they're calling it. But I think this is just simply, look, Trump still thinks he's in charge. How can we break it to him? Because he's still behaving as if he's running the show, but actually he's not doing what in some cases, what the globalists want.
What's he doing to suggest that he thinks he's in charge other than saying that he can pardon himself?
Well, it's that sort of thing. And also taking a role in this amazing role in North Korea, which was not expected. I mean, he's written this book, The Art of the Deal, which is all about, you know, kind of upping the ante in negotiations, right, which, you know, in Trump language means
threatening to get in bed with your opponent's wife.
Well,
threatening
nuclear war against North Korea. Was it in this case?
I don't think he's going to get in bed with Kim's wife.
No. but I mean, the point here being what he's done is he started to conduct basically he's supposed to have all gone through the State Department. He didn't. He said, right, just come and have a chat with me. And everyone's like, oh my God, really? We talked directly with Trump. He's definitely not the person the globalists wanted in. They wanted Hillary in.
And well, that's interesting. That brings us to the parallel of Nixon and Kissinger during Watergate. There's, I think, the best explanation for Watergate, which Russ Baker gets into in his book Family of Secrets about the Bush family, is that actually what it really was a coup d'etat by folks in the deep state who didn't appreciate Nixon and Kissinger winging it and making peace with China without asking the proper people first. And so likewise, you might be right. Trump might be winging it a little bit with Korea.
Yeah, then there's free trade. Well, this is what they love, isn't it? Right from the days of the Hanseatic League and the, you know, British East India Company and the rest of them. This really means using the dependency of nations on foreign food and energy to bring them to heel. So threatening to cut off their food, threatening to cut off their energy. I mean, it's like some gangster landlord, you know, threatening to turn off your electricity supply, threatening to boot you out of the house, you know, turn off your water or whatever. And that's effectively what free trade means nowadays. And they're going to try and keep this going because I think it's quite obvious the Middle East at some point in the near future is going to explode. And, you know, this is what these trade wars over the last few weeks are about, I think, Kevin, is that more and more people are thinking that there are no similarities and there's no relationship to be had amongst the superpowers, that those relationships that have been there for years have broken down. I mean, particularly the British have been absolutely devious in doing this through this Skripal case. And, you know, the city of Salisbury was where I was. I worked for just over a year for the BBC down in Salisbury. So I was particularly niffed to see this ridiculous fake news story spun all around the world. And then loads of Russian diplomats expelled on the basis of nothing, and a drug that's supposed to be one of the most deadly weapons in the world that doesn't actually kill people. And they just kind of get off out of their hospital bed and walk off.
Yeah. What's the latest on that? Because the you know, the original claim was that it was that incredibly deadly nerve gas, but then,
well, it's a nerve agent, Novichok. Yeah.
So they claimed it was Novichok, but then that wasn't consistent with a lot of what went on. And then there was some report from a Swiss lab that it was something else, some kind of an incapacitating hallucinogen, I think, was what they said.
Absolutely right. Yeah, BZ, I think, and that I think looks much more likely than Novichok. The whole thing seems to be completely made up. And then the nerve agent is one for us to begin with. It's on the bench where the couple are. Then it's supposed to be on the car, inside the car, on the car door handle. Then they discover it's actually on the door of the house. And the police officer that went there, who was a detective, by the way, not an ordinary police officer, turns out that he hadn't actually been to the house, but he managed to get contaminated. So how did he manage to get contaminated? I mean, it's just, there doesn't really seem to be any sense to this at all. The other thing, which very few people know about this, is that there was a very tough chief constable in Wiltshire up until the end of January time, where he was booted out. I mean, he was very critical of the former Conservative Prime Minister Edward Heath, who lived there, who said being a child abuser.
Right, which I believe he was, wasn't he? I mean,
yes, he certainly was. The myth was that he was asexual. The fact of the matter was that he was, and I've heard this from people who knew him personally, was very interested in young men, very, very interested in underage men and boys. And so for the chief constable of Wiltshire to come out and say, actually, oh, we've got plenty of evidence here that he was not necessarily a paedophile, because that's kind of under the age of 11 or so. But we're talking about very underage boys being supplied to who was the prime minister that brought Britain into the common market back in the early 1970s. So Mike Veal was the chief constable. He got booted out up to Cleveland, which is up in the north, the far sort of northern wastelands,
yes,
in the north of Britain, which is a pretty dreadful part of the country, I have to say. I'm sorry for anyone that lives up there, but it is. It's, I mean, all the industry's gone. It's kind of, you know, lost its reason to be, really.
Is that where Ian Greenhall lives?
Don't know. The point being, the new guy that came in to take over as chief constable of Wiltshire, it was his first day in the job when this all happened. So he was just doing a press conference saying, hi guys, I'm the new chief constable. And suddenly he's told, you've got a nerve agent attack in Salisbury, and three people, one of your constable, one of your police officers is going to die. We're treating them in the hospital, blah, blah, blah. So he had no time to build any relationships with any of the senior staff. And then, of course, straight away after that, the anti-terror police from London come in and say, oh, well, we're not interested in what the Wiltshire police say anyway. So the whole thing, I think, from start to finish was a complete and utter scam. And what it's done is it's just soured relationships with the Russians. But I can tell you, the Russians are ready for a fight. The Russians I've spoken to, at any point now, they say, look, we don't want to fight, but if you're going to start killing our lads in Syria, then we're going to start killing people back. Now, they're not boasting when they're saying that. They're saying it reluctantly, but they're saying, don't push us around. In a similar way, actually, to the way that the Brits said to Hitler, don't push us around, back in 1939.
Interesting comparison. Well, how about this explosion in the Middle East that you see coming? Is that primarily going to be Israel finally getting its chance to get the U.S. to war with Iran now that they've got Trump in office? I mean, my take on Trump is a little different from yours. I think that Trump was inserted largely by a hardline Likudnik Zionist configuration that's linked to the Kosher Nostra, which is, of course, where Trump's background is. Trump got his job from Roy Cohn. Exactly. So I think those guys want war with Iran. They tried several times. In 2007, they stole nuclear weapons from Minot, North Dakota. Cheney had plans to sink an American ship in the Persian Gulf that Gwyneth Todd was able to torpedo, as it were. So there's a whole history there where this faction that did 9/11 also, you know, they wanted to take out seven countries in 5 years, and the most important of those was Iran. But then the realists, the Brzezinski faction, pushed back against that. And now they've got their Kosher Nostra frontman, Trump, in power, and Israel has a free hand to try to gin up some kind of war with Iran. So is that what you see coming?
Well, yes and no, because I think Trump still thinks he's in charge, and I don't think he wants the war. But, I mean, it's pretty evidenced by the fact that just a month or so ago, he was talking about pulling all the troops out of Syria.
But the next minute, there was a false flag, and he went along with the response.
Well, that's right. What he had to get, look, listen, I'm not saying he got a kick up the backside at that point. Don't say things like this. But I mean, he still thinks he's running the show. And I think he's not as bad as a lot of people are painting out. He's really being manipulated, as all people in his position are by the mafia. And at the end of the day, I think we would probably be in a worse position if we had some kind of Hillary Clinton type character who's already built up a really quite scary relationship with these, you know, war faction. But you're right about the Middle East. It's definitely Iran and Israel are going to come to blows somehow, some way. I don't know quite how. Probably a false flag, since this is what the Israelis seem to have been doing most of the time certainly since 1995, when Netanyahu took over on the basis of false flag attacks, 1995 and 1996, after his man had murdered Yitzhak Rabin after the Oslo peace talks at that massive peace rally in Jerusalem. And Netanyahu has basically made his career on false flag terror attacks. So I imagine we'll see something like that. Then we'll see quite quickly the Americans and the Russians come to blows, probably in Syria. And maybe after a little while, the Chinese coming in on Russia's side. So it's starting to pan out as, a much bigger world war than World War II was. I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are, but that seems to be the way, I see it developing.
So do you think the Bilderbergers are thinking about this or talking about it in secret? Because I didn't see World War III as an agenda item.
No, I added that amended version. World War III, well, listen, I mean, I don't think they're not all interested in that. I mean, it's like a pyramid at the very top. I think people like Kissinger are definitely thinking along these lines. But are those around him on the steering committee, some will be, some won't be. But certainly most of the ordinary people who are attending haven't got a clue about this stuff. People like George Osborne, no. I mean, he's there because he's just a useful puppet, a useful idiot who will do what he's told. I mean, he always was, even back at Oxford in the Bullingdon Club days. He was the little runaround boy who used to be told, do this, do that. He was their kind of gopher, you know, the runner. And he would turn up the day after they'd smashed up a pub or a restaurant with a checkbook, and he'd make sure that the publican was paid, you know, for the repairs. That was George Osborne's role in those days, and he's still the same now, you know. So anyway, going on through the list, just trying to get through it, we've got US world leadership is the next one, which is really, I would say, is about contingencies for the last day of a dying Babylonian empire. Because the US system has become, ever since Nixon kicked off, I think it was 1971, off the dollar gold being backed by gold, we've been living in this fictional world of printed money that it's not actually worth anything. And what that does is it just completely destroys your economy bit by bit. It's like literally day by day. And so, I mean, I think that's why the dollar is no longer really seen as the major world currency. And the US has been fighting like crazy. Actually, the Brits have been helping them to a large extent to try and keep the dollar as the main currency of the world. But it's becoming, you know, beyond a joke. At some point, it's just going to go. Next one is, and we're getting into the more interesting stuff now, which is Russia. Putin will beat us in a straight fight. So are there anyone got any good ideas for getting rid of Putin? You know, dirty tricks. That's another subject. Also, quantum computing. That, I suppose, goes along with the artificial intelligence stuff on the agenda. Loads of Google people there, Kevin.
Yeah, speaking of which, how about this Jared Cohen of Google Jigsaw? According to the research we've done at Veterans Today, Google Jigsaw is working with mercenaries and black operators and has become really the equivalent of a black ops wing of a major intelligence agency. And has been involved in some of the monkey business in Syria.
I think what's going on here, along with the quantum computing and the artificial intelligence, is a really an attempt to get round the fact that military people have a conscience. Military people have a soul. You know, some people will think, well, the military don't, you know, but actually they do.
Okay, Kissinger said military men are just stupid animals.
And they were trying to replicate human consciousness, Kevin. This is what they're trying to do. This is the sort of transhumanist agenda, which has crept right into, I mean, Google's Ray Kurzweil is like the guru in this area. And you can feel his kind of presence in the background in these agenda items. And some of the people that, you know, from DeepMind, et cetera, that have been brought along to Bilderberg this year. You know, so we're talking about things like the military applications of this technology are controlling drone swarms. Well, great. You know, the killer drones again, the Reapers from the Grim Reapers from thousands of feet murdering people. Now, the you know, like I say, the robotics people are getting really upset about this. They're saying you can't do it, but they're doing it anyway. This is the subtext behind these basic little agenda items here. And the idea, I suppose, is to see who is kind of bamboozled into believing this stuff and who can make a convincing case for the nonsense that these Bilderbergs are spin, that they're coming out with.
You know,
politicians to go on the television and sell this nonsense to the public as if they believe it.
Well, while humans still have control of these lethal technologies, I wonder if one of those poor, dumb animals that Kissinger described, that is a military person somewhere, might not be tempted to try to send in a swarm of killer drones to Bilderberg.
Well, look, this is always the temptation to look at, isn't it? We had some very, very interesting conversations with the British police about this when they were in Watford, back in, I think it was 2013, 2014. You're facing the wrong way, guys. You know, the criminals are in there. The German police were very kind of, you know, you could wave your hand in front of their face and they wouldn't even blink. You know, they weren't interested, but the Brits were. And there was definitely some, you know, consideration. Why, if you want to file a report, please, you know, this I think is a much more sensible attitude, is to actually arrest these people with a legitimate regime. I mean, we had the Malaysians do this, didn't we, with Bush and Blair and Zippy Livni in the Israeli war criminals. The Malaysians
and then Malaysian airliners started falling out of the sky.
Yeah, not quite straight away afterwards, but no, I know. I take what you're saying. But, you know, this, I think the judicial process is a key part of understanding what's wrong with our planet, is the judiciary is being controlled and there isn't no proper judicial process. It's there again, a bit like the news in the evenings. You know, this is theater you're watching. It's not news. And when the kids are saying, is this real, daddy, or is this a play? You know, the thing to say to the kids is it's actually a play. Mm-hmm. Actually, what we're watching here, they're trying to convince us that this is real democracy in action, big decisions being made. But actually, it's all scripted.
Or you take John Ravusky's idea and say, well, you've seen the Roger Rabbit movie, right? These are all Roger Rabbit cartoons. There's some reality, and then there are some cartoons, and they get all mixed up.
And then we've got Saudi Arabia and Iran, which is an easy one, isn't it? That's the fake Muslim state meeting the real one. Yeah. How long can the facade continue? I mean, I don't know how they have the cheek to put these things on as serious agenda items. Then the post-truth world. Well, we know what that's about. That's new ways to control social media. Now nobody believes the mainstream press. And I mean, I say that genuinely. People I know of all walks of life, Kevin, and people I just chat to in the street here sometimes, they're very, very distrusting of what they're seeing in the mainstream press on television, etc. Now, a lot of people just don't bother with television, particularly young people. They're getting all their info from social media. And so Bilderberg is thinking, now, how can we manipulate social media to make sure they see what we want them to see?
Well, there's a huge pushback in this area now. I mean, just this year, we've seen massive censorship on YouTube, thousands of channels taken down. There are three strikes enforcement. We've seen a whole sweeping attempt to crush the independent media.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's because, yeah, this is a major plank of what Bilderberg do, is this war machine. The media is there just to tell people when the next war is happening. And that's why, when I was elbowed out of the BBC, I felt at the time, you know, this wasn't a realistic process. You know, I think it's more important than that. I see it really as kind of souring gas we're getting now through our TVs. It's poisoning the humanity's nervous system. I mean, that's really what the television, the radio, the newspaper networks are. It's a way of us perceiving what's going on around us. And for many years, here in Britain anyway, up until around about 1987, when Victor Rothschild ordered the sacking of the director general of the BBC, you used to at least get balanced documentaries. You'd get both sides, and it was a professional job you did. When you went into a subject to make a film about it, you would look at all of the credible arguments of all sorts, and even the way out wacky ones. If there was some credibility to it, you would include it in the documentary. Nowadays, we're getting nothing like that at all. All we're getting is three or four different people, all with very similar views on one end of the spectrum. And that end is usually the kind of neoliberal and certainly pro-NATO, pro-authoritarian, pro-EU generally system. So this is propaganda we're living in, a kind of Goebbels propaganda age.
Absolutely. And Bilderberg is actually putting this on the agenda, the post-truth world, which, of course, they have helped create, in a sense, by tolerating these outrages against truth, with the false flags like 9/11, to my mind, being the most egregious, but you know, so many others. But their take on it, of course, is that the problem is the social media, which has led to populist explosions. Again, this ties in with their main theme this year, which is the populist uprising in Europe.
Well, I mean, what they've done, Kevin, is they've led humanity to a cliff edge, and very, very few people realize we're there. And that's the genius, if you want, the evil genius of the Bilderbergers. And it just shows to me that there is, it's actually people are, it's a little bit like, I mean, I was chatting to a friend about this a couple of days ago, which is about original sin. You know, now this is not a popular idea, but it is, I think it's absolutely true, is that people are basically selfish. Yeah, they'll be kind to others, of course they will. But at the very bottom, if you can pander to someone's selfish instincts and actually boost them, reward them for being selfish, that you can create a whole kind of managerial class and a political class and a journalistic class and professional classes right across our universities that just say what we tell them to say, because the idea of breaking from the pack, it just completely goes against their instincts. I think, personally, I think people have to work very, very hard at morality. I think they've got to work very hard at being good people. It's not an easy ride at all. And that's what I mean when I say original sin. I think we can very, very easily drift towards that. Well, this is the easy route. This is the simple route. I don't want to leave my comfort zone. The fact of the matter is that you're going to have to leave your comfort zone if you want to find out the way the world really works. And that's the sort of trick that these guys play on people, I think, right across the world, is that they're trying their best, they're doing their absolute best to create a little comfort zone for you to walk down where you can just do your 9-to-5 every day, forget about the rest of the world, and everything will be fine. And this is what the media is doing now. Most of the mainstream press is there to just sort of mollycoddle us into thinking it's all going to be fine. The fact of the matter is, literally, we're on the brink of financial disaster. We, you know, the various things that have been going wrong with the cash systems. The bank, by the way, the London Stock Exchange didn't open this morning for an hour. There was something, they wouldn't explain why, but there was some sort of massive glitch going on. These sorts of things are warning signs, Kevin, that something is deeply wrong. And we should know when massively important banks like Deutsche Bank lose half their value so far this year, and there are all sorts of other fines and stuff being imposed on some of the other banks, that we're living in a very fragile, dangerous financial world. There's no analysis of it, and that's why I think the big criminals in all of this are the mainstream press. Those journalists we see every night on the TV, what they're doing is they're just telling us what they think we would like to hear, not what we need to hear.
I agree. Of course, if they were telling us what we need to hear, pretty soon they would be working with you on the local radio station instead of on the national news.
I actually have quite a struggle keeping my radio station going. I've had a few shots across the bow. But, you've got to be very, very determined to stay in and do this stuff. You know, I've been very lucky over the years. I've managed to survive it, Kevin. A lot of other people have just said, well, hang it. I've got kids. I've got a mortgage. You know, that's it. I'm out of here.
Yeah, well, I can understand that. That's been a kind of a long struggle for me to slowly get slightly established in alternative media. Your take on original sin is interesting. I guess theologically in Islam we would have a slightly different way of framing it, although I think we would agree on the same reality. That is that the people in their selfish little comfort zones are afflicted by some kind of cosmic evil. But in Islam, we would say, no, there's no original sin. That is, the human soul or spirit, which is the original human identity, is created perfect like everything else. But part of the perfect creation is the existence of evil, which is there as a test for us to work against, to build our souls and our spirits by struggling against that evil. And the shaitan, audhu billah, or Satan, the embodiment of evil, has been allowed to test us. And so it's all part of the test. And unfortunately, a lot of folks who are languishing in their comfort zones and behaving selfishly, not taking on the real issues and struggling for truth and justice, those people are not doing very well on the test. But they could be awakened to do better. There's nothing inherent in human nature that says that people are basically evil, much less that all of creation is evil. And so in Islam, we say this was one of the mistakes of kind of classical Christianity, was this belief in some kind of original sin, which, of course, went really far with Protestantism and so on.
Listen, please don't associate me with the Puritans. No. I mean, that was like the second big wave, wasn't it? I mean, if you go back to 1154, I think it was, where they had the great schism between the Church of Constantinople and the Church of Rome, the Orthodox Church as it became in the East and the Church of Rome in the West. The Puritans and Luther and his lot were the next big schism in the Christian Church, which was originated in Germany and Switzerland, but you know, it caused absolute mayhem here through Henry VIII, the dissolution of the monasteries. You know what? In the medieval times, the monasteries used to provide the basic stuff that, you know, the National Health Service does today, and our schools and education, excuse me, do today. That is, to say, education, libraries, healthcare. That was what.
And if they sold a few indulgences to pay for it, well, that comes with the territory, right?
Now, hang on a minute. No, because it was free. Yeah. So if you needed healthcare here in Somerset through the medieval time, and you were getting sick, you know, you'd be taken to the infirmary and you'd be looked after by the monks. Henry VIII, who obviously was a Protestant, and he didn't like he used it as an excuse, really, Protestantism, to just steal all of the wealth and the land from the monasteries and smash all the monasteries down. It was just all sorts of silly excuses. And some of the abbots were courageous, like the Glastonbury abbot. I can't remember his name, I'm sorry, but he stood up to it, and he had his head chopped off up on Glastonbury Tor for his pleasure. But it was one of the most powerful and effective systems, the monastic system, and it provided a lot of health care for people. So that was, I mean, it was a disaster, really. And of course, it was also played out through the English Civil War in the mid-1600s, which was, that was the Puritans with Cromwell versus the previous people, basically normal people from before, the Cavaliers. And the result was disaster for the world, because it was really the introduction of capitalism, mm-hmm. having a whole country run by the merchant classes after the Civil War, and that basically it led to the British Empire, it led to the Industrial Revolution, and basically the banker and the merchant classes running the entire country. They'd run city states on many parts of Europe before, but that was the first time they took over an entire country. So the Protestants have got a lot to answer for.
Right. Well, Lawrence Guyonneau, in his book From Yahweh to Zion, argues that the Protestants were backed to some extent by Jewish banking power.
Well, I don't know the details of that, but there are certain allegations saying that Cromwell was partly induced by Jews who quite rightly wanted to come to Britain. I mean, they'd been expelled previously.
Right.
There is another angle to all of this, and that's Freemasonry. Which is very, very, getting back to Bilderberg, very, very important. I think it's quite really important to understand the guy, Joseph Rettinger, who was a Pole, who was with Bernhard, started the very first meetings. He was hated by the Polish patriots, and also he was implicated in the death of General Sikorsky, who's the Polish leader in exile.
So what's the connection to Freemasonry?
Well, he was a Mason. Rettinger was.
Really?
He was also working for MI6. And there's been quite a lot of literature in Poland published, in Polish, unfortunately, about him over the last 20 years. I mean, I wouldn't say scallywag, that's too kind. He was a schemer and an intriguer and a Mason. And also the other connection I dug up years ago was the Andrew Palmer was the organiser of one of the British Bilderberg meetings, the one in Turnberry. He was the personal assistant of the Duke of Kent, who's the Grand Master of United Grand Lodge, which effectively means World Freemasonry. So the Masons are all over Bilderberg. The secrecy, and I look at it and I think that this is some kind of literally, age-old plot. And if you look back at the letters of Albert Pike, people like that, and Mazzini in Italy, it does look as if they had a whole kind of plan for history, which has been slowly playing out, all based on this idea that Jesus Christ had children with Mary Magdalene. And the big secret that the Masons, I mean, it sounds like a joke to say it, but this is what they believed, apparently, that they were trying to guard the bloodline of Christ. You remember the Holy Blood and the Holy Grail that came out in the
1970s? Right, right, and popularized in that Dan Brown novel, The Da Vinci Code.
Well, yeah, as well, but it was Michael Bagent before that wrote the Holy Blood and the Holy Grail. And I mean, this is, I think, the core of a lot of this Templar stuff. Yeah, so going back to effectively what is now going on with the Israel project, British Israelism, which is the 10th Crusade. The last of the Crusades, maybe. The idea is building on this ridiculous concept during the Crusades, which was a completely fake idea that you could go over to the Holy Land and be a good guy and chop people's heads off, and everyone would believe in Christ more, and that you were more somehow better to running Jerusalem than anybody who actually lived there. It's very, very similar, isn't it, to the whole Zionist project?
Absolutely. Well, I actually had a bumper sticker printed up that reads, "End the Crusades, give Palestine back." getting back to the kind of the Freemasonic side of this, I would question whether this notion of the protecting the bloodline of Jesus, this myth among a certain element of Freemasonry that Jesus had children through Mary Magdalene, I would argue that's perhaps symbolic of this attack on religion and the spiritual quality of religion in favor of a worldly philosophy. And Judaism has always been very worldly and anti-spiritual too. Hence the kind of link up between the Freemasonry and a certain wing of Judaism, especially the heretical wing, the Shabbateanism or Sabbateanism and so on. But it seems to me that what we're really seeing is an attack on the spiritual dimension of religion, which is the real dimension of religion, in favor of a worldview that's entirely this worldly, that's only interested in raw power in the physical space-time continuum material world that we're being tested with, but it's actually also dedicated to trying to suppress real knowledge of the spirituality that is actually the real purpose of our existence. So this is basically a satanic kind of effort to keep us down. And that's Satan's role is to try to be an enemy to humanity and to block the path of people who are trying to walk the spiritual path and to, you know, deceive us and lie in ambush for us and so on. And so our job is to, of course, push back against that, try and avoid that, and try to walk that spiritual path.
Yeah, and I mean, Netanyahu, does he strike you as someone that follows the Ten Commandments?
Oh, he's such a gangster. He's just a total thug, you know, like a two-bit Corleone.
Yeah, I mean, these people are nihilists, I think. I mean, you may maybe call them Satanists if you want, but I think it's easier to describe them as nihilistic. That is to say, they're interested in power, and they'll say and do anything in order to get that power and keep it, and anyone that tells them that they can't, to kill them. They don't really seem to take much of an interest in, you know, in human life. That sort of thing doesn't really bother them much. They don't seem to care how many they kill to get the power. And effectively, you know, we're having to stand up to these psychopaths now. I think the Russians are absolutely prepared to do it. You know, they have made it clear. We're not going to take any nonsense from you guys. And thank God for them, because without them, I mean, China is very influenced by secret societies. I was looking at, to see which countries have police units who arrest and clamp down on and have criminalized secret societies. Do you know, have you had a look at this, Kevin?
No, I know nothing about that.
Go to Singapore.
Really?
Yes, so they have a whole police department devoted to anti-secret societies. And if you're discovered to be in a secret society, you can very easily go to court. Where they find the evidence, you will go to jail and you will stay in jail for quite lengthy periods. So I was quite surprised to see that. And I'm quite proud in a silly way, because it's an old British colony. And I think that the Brits realised when they were there, look, OK, well, we might be Masons, but these secret societies they've got over here, we really got to do something about them.
Well, maybe we need the same legislation in the UK and the US and everywhere else. Well, Tony,
they should be training all our police, I think, all over the Western world.
There you go. Instead of sending your police to Israel to learn how to treat everybody like Palestinians, especially black people here in America, and murder them without provocation and beat them up and mistreat them, instead, let's send our police to Singapore to get trained in how to arrest people who belong to secret societies. Well, I think that's a good place to leave it, because we're at the end of the hour. So thank you, Tony Gosling. I appreciate your fantastic work. Since leaving the BBC, you've been freed to pursue the truth. So God bless you and keep on pursuing it.
Thank you. Just give me my websites. We've got a program we're doing live from Bilderberg tomorrow at this week. You won't be able to pick it up on FM there, I don't think. But it's on thisweek.org.uk. Also, the old Bilderberg.org website is still there. There's a lot of the original stuff I dug out in the 1990s about the origins of Bilderberg. And because I was so annoyed by seeing all this, there was actually quite a lot of really seriously anti-Semitic stuff. It seemed to be the only stuff around on the internet back in the mid-90s about Bilderberg. And also do this 911forum.org.uk, which is a look at, really basically 9/11 truth people here in the UK, looking at 9/11 and how it's affecting the world today, with, you know, looking at each terrorist attack and scam like the Skripal Salisbury affair in detail.
Yeah, that's excellent material. So we will link those websites at the Truth Jihad Radio blog. And if you didn't know it already, just go to truthjihad.com and click on the radio link and you're there. All right. Well, thank you, Tony
Thanks,
Gosling.
Kevin.
Keep up the great work. God bless.
Cheers. And God bless you, too.
Okay. Take care. Bye. To know.